Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. On the program this week, an old friend, Jimmy Vielkind, Albany Bureau Chief for Politico. Welcome back, Jimmy.
Pleasure to be here, Alan.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Politico. How's it going?
Oh, everything's wonderful. We live in interesting times. The bold newsman's blessing or a curse that you live in interesting times. And so we're just sort of having a lot on our plate, chronicling a very kind of unprecedented election cycle, and also watching the gears of state government adjust to what's been a pretty seismic event with the federal charges that were levied last month against several members of Andrew Cuomo's inner circle, and the resulting resignation of Alan Calieros from the SUNY Polytechnic Institute.
Well, boy, we have enough to talk about, that's for sure. It's my impression that things are very, look, I'm a columnist. Every week I look for things to write. We do know those things you've just mentioned are very much in the forefront. And yet, we're not hearing that much from Andrew Cuomo, not the usual that we used to hear. I think it's fairly quiet. Is that because everybody's waiting for a shoe to drop?
Well, we know that when criminal plate was unsealed in late September, that eventually the case would be brought before a grand jury and that there might be an indictment coming. So my Capitol colleagues and I are waiting for that. We're waiting to see if there are additional charges against any other people or if there are any additional revelations in that indictment. Anyone who's followed these kinds of things in the past knows that you charge a bunch of people. The idea is to try and induce some of them to cooperate with the investigation. The idea is to sort of shake things loose and see if a broader case can be brought and see if more people are brought in that. So that's something that I'm watching for very closely. And as this has been going on, Andrew Cuomo has been out and about. He has announced a rehabilitation for Penn Station. He has awarded some Teacher of the Year prizes. But he hasn't been a presence in Albany, which is normal. I think that he has tried to avoid Albany and avoid the state capital as much as possible, which is easier for him to do, of course, this time of year when the state legislature is not in session.
Jimmy, this is extraordinary stuff. First of all, it's important to know a new poll, the Siena Research Institute poll, shows that 56% of respondents still view Cuomo favorably, despite the fact that his best friends, his admitted best friends, are all heading for the you-know-what.
That's right. It's certainly a mark of continuing support for the governor. It's maybe a mark that voters haven't been so enthralled with the alleged corruption that happened with members of Cuomo's inner circle, including Joe Prococo, a man whom the governor has likened to a brother, and Calieros, who has been a major figure here in the Capital District, but whose empire of nanotechnology facilities has started to spread across the state. I honestly think that voters have had a lot to hear about, and they've perhaps been distracted by the presidential election, which has eaten up quite a bit of media attention, quite a bit of perhaps their news reading abilities. And in some ways, I think that the cases against Mr. Prococo, Mr. Calieros, and Todd Howe, a lobbyist who was close to the administration, have been somewhat on the back burner in these recent weeks. In some ways, the kind of unprecedentedly crazy nature of this presidential election has worked to Andrew Cuomo's favor.
There's another thing I've often suspected, Jimmy. Maybe you won't agree. I think the strongest thing that Andrew Cuomo has going for him is the Cuomo name. Always has been, always will be. Some people, they don't pay much attention to state politics. They say, hey, you know, he's just a chip off the old block, which he is not.
I think that that's possible. I think that if you look at his favorability ratings and his standing over the 6 years that he's been governor, they've risen, they've fallen. He was riding very, very high after his first term in office. He won major plaudits when he pushed successfully to legalize same-sex marriage in 2011. And he took a tumble, particularly in upstate areas, when he pushed through the SAFE Act, the controversial gun control measure. So one thing that in the polls we see is that the unknown factor among respondents is very low. It's basically single digits. So, for example, if you poll a candidate often, unless there are really established political figure, there's going to be a very sizable percentage of voters who just don't know or don't have an opinion of that particular person. I think at this point, most voters know Andrew Cuomo. They know him for what he's done and for his record. And he's being judged on his own actions.
Jimmy, do you think with everything that Preet Bharara has done, the indictment and conviction of the two top leaders in the state, legislative leaders, the two of the three people in the room, the third guy in the room, of course, was Andrew Cuomo. Do you think there's any possibility that Preet Bharara could, in fact, indict Andrew Cuomo?
Well, stay tuned. Mr. Bharara, the federal prosecutor in Manhattan, those are his words, stay tuned, not mine. He said when announcing the charges in late September against some of Mr. Cuomo's inner circle that there are no charges that implicate the governor. The governor does not appear in the criminal complaint, even as a unnamed figure. And that's where we are right now. Like, as I said, we know that a grand jury is likely hearing evidence. We know that it's possible that there will be additional people or facts that could be brought to bear in these alleged schemes. So I have no reason to think, I don't know of any pattern of activity that could lead to the indictment of Andrew Cuomo, but I'm not a prosecutor and I'm not privy to the information of the prosecutor. So I, like many, am waiting to see.
You know, speaking of trials, let's go to Bridgegate. Now, that's an interesting one. You got Chris Christie. Did he know, did he not know what his subordinates were doing? Like, and did Andrew Cuomo know what his very close subordinates were doing, basically selling off the state one piece at a time, allegedly. So did Chris Christie know? We don't know. But now, every once in a while, we see Andrew Cuomo, his co-partner in running the Port Authority, his name being brought up. What's that all about?
Well, this sort of came up by surprise. What we learned at the trial from the testimony of David Wildstein, who was a political advisor, who has pleaded guilty, by the way, for his role in the Bridgegate plot. And right now what is happening is the trial of Bill Baroni, the former executive director, the former deputy executive director of the Port Authority, appointed by New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, and Bridget Ann Kelly, who was a political advisor to Mr. Christie. What we heard David Wildstein say was that he was made aware of a conversation between Governors Christie and Cuomo, in which, according to Wildstein's testimony, a plan to sort of whitewash the Bridgegate affair was concocted and was blessed by Cuomo, who, as you noted, Alan, is the sort of bilateral partner in running this bi-state authority. So Andrew Cuomo forcefully denied this. He's always said that he learned about Bridgegate in the papers. He's always said that he didn't know what was going on. And frankly, many people who follow these things closely have always raised an eyebrow at that claim. And there are many facets of the Bridgegate scandal. It was a New York appointee, Pat Foy, who sort of stood up and blew the whistle and said, this is wrong. This has to stop. This might be a federal crime. Lots of people have speculated as to whether or not Andrew Cuomo would know that Pat Foy knew, whether Pat Foy would have sent sort of a memo, basically a cease and desist at some point without at least the tacit knowledge of Cuomo or one of his closest aides. But this is the first time that anyone has said, and again, under oath in a federal courtroom, that the governor of New York was aware of what was going on and actually discussed a strategy for dealing with the fallout of it with Governor Christie of New Jersey. Now, Cuomo has vociferously denied this, and his aides have questioned and impugned Wildstein's credibility. He has, of course, pleaded guilty to several federal felonies. But there's another witness, a man named Scott Reckler, a Long Island-based real estate developer and someone who is, frankly, a Cuomo intimate and a major political donor, who was presaged to testify, essentially corroborating Wildstein's account. Now, we're still waiting to hear what Reckler has to say when he takes the witness stand. But I do think that we're going to see perhaps Cuomo get dragged into the Bridgegate affair. And of course, Alan, as you know, the basic trade here was that Cuomo would stay quiet and back Christie up. And he sort of has a non-aggression pact with Chris Christie, which makes sense both ways. You can see the sense of having someone who's your close neighbor, who you're inevitably going to work with on matters of infrastructure in the New York metropolitan region. On the other hand, Christie was a rising Republican figure. At the same time, Cuomo was a rising Democratic figure. And so I don't know why there wouldn't be a contentious relationship just based on regular party loyalty. So there has been this non-aggression pact seems to be the course that they have found, with Cuomo not weighing in on Bridgegate, not opining on Christie, not attacking Christie, sometimes pretty obviously so. And Christie, in the 2014 campaign for governor, doing nothing to help Cuomo's Republican challenger, Rob Astorino. And that's something that Astorino has called Christie out on. And most recently, when these revelations came up at trial, Astorino actually called for both Cuomo and Christie to resign their offices. They both declined to do so.
Yeah.
But that's something that I think is burbling over at a federal courthouse in Newark. And we will see what, if anything, emerges from Mr. Reckler's testimony, which should be coming in the days and weeks ahead.
Well, in the same way that Cuomo has to account for three of his top advisors who have gotten out of the way now and are consigned to go away, and Christie is claiming that he didn't know, doesn't anybody ever have to take responsibility for the fact that, forget about criminal activity, that their guys were screwing up? I mean, it's both of their administrations.
Well, I think that that will be left up to the voters. You know, Andrew Cuomo claims he was completely unaware. He said he didn't know about any of the bid rigging schemes that were alleged in the federal and another state criminal complaint against Calieros, Prococo, and Howe. He says he didn't know that Prococo was taking side payments from an executive at an energy company that was seeking state approvals for a power plant it's trying to build in Orange County. I don't know if voters are going to believe that, and I think it's too early to say. But I also think that this stain is there. Keep in mind, Alan, Andrew Cuomo ran for governor in 2010 on a promise to clean up Albany. He was going to change the way business was done, and he was going to change that basic headline coming out of the state capitol, which forever was, they fought about it, they bickered, they didn't get it done, and up, there goes another one off to jail in handcuffs.
Don't I know that?
Cuomo promised to change that narrative, and flash forward 6 years later, it looks as though he hasn't. So the fact
What do you mean it looks as though he hasn't? It's clear he hasn't. His closest aides are all going to be indicted.
Yes, they'll likely be indicted. So if he's failed by that measure, the question is whether there will be a political opponent who makes that point.
You got one in mind? Does anybody have? My theory is that the Republicans have the same old, same olds. They got Astorino. They've got this guy out in Buffalo. They got a couple of guys. But they don't have anybody who really can give them a run. Now, I say that remembering full well that when Mario ran, I used to say, you can't beat somebody with no one, and yet they did. George Pataki was a no one at the time. So you got anybody? Give us an insight. You know, you're the Politico reporter. It's a great institution. You've got your ear to the ground. Who the Republicans got?
Well, there are a couple of Republican candidates going beneath the surface. You mentioned some of them. Astorino is clearly making sure he stays relevant
he
for the statewide election cycle. Carl Paladino has said that he believes a Donald Trump presidency will sweep him to the forefront of Republican politics in the state, and he's talking about another gubernatorial run. I don't think that's going to pan out. I don't think that Donald Trump is going to win New York, and it seems, based on polling, like he's going to have a real struggle winning the general election in the presidency. So a few other people to watch are Harry Wilson, who is right now a private business advisor. He worked on the president's auto recovery task force earlier on in the Obama administration, and he ran in 2010 for New York State Comptroller. He has been putting his toes in the water. He has been talking to the people you talk to when you're thinking about a statewide run. He doesn't have a political record. He has the ability to bring some of his own personal wealth, and he is a man who has done well in this world, to a potential campaign. And it's perhaps possible that he would emerge as a Republican contender if he chose to do so. Another person to watch is Mark Molinaro, the Dutchess County executive. He, too, has positioned himself. He started staking out positions on relevant issues. And if you're looking for a contrast, is a younger guy. He's a fresh face. He has risen from, I think, being one of the youngest mayors ever elected in the United States. He was the mayor of Tivoli, a relatively small town, to then serving in the state assembly and then working now as the Dutchess County executive. He has started to make the rounds as well, and I think he's someone that we should also be watching.
Well, he is a fresh face, and I know him and admire him, and, you know, he could catch fire. However, they are all what I call who-he's. WHO-HE? So it would look like Cuomo is sort of scot-free. Now, he's done very badly upstate. Zephyr Teachout cleaned his clock with no money and anything else. She's now running for Congress. I would think that there's a possibility if she wins that congressional seat, she could try to take him on in a primary.
I haven't heard that. I know that she's very focused right now, of course, as you said, on this congressional race, which is shaping out to be a very close contest, one that could, of course, be a bellwether nationally for Democrats' efforts to retake the House and Republicans' efforts to hold on to a seat that was vacated by the retirement of Congressman Chris Gibson. I do think that there are Democrats who are positioning themselves to run for governor. One who comes to mind is Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner. Another is Kathy Hochul, who is touring the state in her position as lieutenant governor, but who earlier this week, when I asked her about it, did not really say anything about having statewide
ambitions.
You mean
that's if Cuomo doesn't run? She's not going to run against Cuomo.
I did ask if Cuomo doesn't run, and she wouldn't answer the question.
She can't win.
Listeners can read into that what they will. But then we're assuming, and you're assuming, that Governor Cuomo is going to seek a third term.
That's right.
Which is something that I'm fairly skeptical of, given the fact that you do have this burbling corruption scandal, due to the fact that it's hard to run the state government. It's hard to sustain an administration for a number of years. And we're already seeing sort of the third string of Cuomo aides come online in terms of the people who are around him who are working to run the government. And also, I think Governor Cuomo knows that third terms are hard. He saw his father, Mario Cuomo, win a third term and then sort of sputter through it, be set by budget problems, and of course lose in that famous 1994 race, a big upset to George Pataki, as you said, the nobody who managed to beat the somebody. And I think that he's aware of that. Now, on the other hand, he's raising lots of money for a potential future run. He had a fundraiser just last week in Saratoga Springs, a golf outing. Andrew Cuomo didn't golf, but he had donors pay to golf in his honor. And he's raising the money. He's sort of sucking the oxygen out of the room, but I'm not convinced he's going to run again.
Okay. Let's talk about some of Andrew Cuomo's contemporary problems with others. It has been said that Andrew Cuomo does not play well with others or in the sandbox. So I'll give you the name and then you'll tell me about it. Tom DiNapoli.
Well, the governor and our state comptroller, Mr. DiNapoli, have had a spat of late that started when Comptroller DiNapoli spoke up after these bid rigging scandals came to light. He said that he should have oversight over some of the contracting that SUNY campuses do. That was oversight that was stripped from his office in 2011. And of course, it's important to note, though, that the scandals that were alleged by federal prosecutors don't technically involve a SUNY campus. They involve these two weird nonprofit corporations called the Fort Schuyler and the Fuller Road Management Corporation, which were never under the comptroller's purview and for a pre-audit and for a pre-approval in the first place. But still, he and many legislators are looking at what's happened, looking at what's alleged, and they are having a moment where they are thinking about something that must be done. So I suspect that that is going to be a issue we'll explore in the coming legislative session. But Andrew Cuomo, never one to happily brook criticism, struck back, not himself, but through the Department of Financial Services, which is led by a woman named Maria Vulo, who was confirmed as superintendent earlier this year. Now, Ms. Vulo is charged with, among other things, monitoring the state's pension fund, which, as some listeners might know, is overseen solely by Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. So Ms. Vulo issued a report questioning the amount of money that has been paid to hedge fund managers as part of the fees for the investments that the state pension fund has. She alleged that these fees were exorbitant. She said that Comptroller DiNapoli has not followed national trends of moving public pension funds away from hedge funds, away from private equity, and sort of the exotic investments that, of course, promise a big return, but charge you some money along the way for doing so. And what has happened is a tit-for-tat that is now moving into its through the week, at least 3 days, and perhaps could keep going. It's a classic Cuomo tactic to have criticism come on one front and to just respond with an attack on a completely different front. It's something that we saw earlier this summer when Comptroller DiNapoli issued several audits questioning the efficacy of some of the Cuomo administration's economic development programs, including the Startup New York program. And it's something we're seeing again here. The best defense, of course, is going on offense on a different front. I think that there are decent cases to be made on both sides in terms of the merits of these hedge fund fees. But seeing this through the larger political context, you're right. It's just very clearly yet another exchange of punches.
Okay, so then what about Mayor Bill de Blasio?
Well, the mayor and the governor have been sniping at each other more or less openly for years at this point, and things continue apace. You know, there's an old famous saying of a Democrat who was not getting along with the governor. His response when asked, oh, what's your relationship like with the governor? He would always smile and say, it's as good as ever. And so I think that's kind of the current situation with Mayor de Blasio. He, of course, is starting to turn his attention to his 2017 election bid. And Governor Cuomo has not shown any proactive love for Mr. de Blasio, I think is the most mild way to put it. The governor continues to talk up potential challengers to de Blasio, including men like Ruben Diaz Jr., the borough president of the Bronx, Hakeem Jeffries, a congressman from Brooklyn, Scott Stringer, a Manhattanite who is working right now as the city comptroller. So that war has sort of gone quiet, but the conflict is ever present. I'm sure there will be new fronts for the mayor and the governor to fight. Just give it a day that ends in Y and it'll come along our way.
But the governor's apparent moves to getting somebody to run against de Blasio doesn't seem to be bearing much fruit.
Well, that's right. To get back to the old line, you can't beat somebody with nobody. And right now there are several potential, rumored, possible, conceivable, perhaps challengers to de Blasio, but no one who's out there saying that they're going to take a shot. And of course, the demographics of New York City being where they are, a Democratic primary is as much, if not a bigger hurdle for a Democratic incumbent mayor than a general election. So there was some talk about Sean Donovan, the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, coming back to New York at the conclusion of the Obama administration to think about a run. There has been talk about Scott Stringer, talk about Hakeem Jeffries, but no one has emerged and no one has positioned themselves as a de Blasio critic. So the extent to which Andrew Cuomo gets specifically involved in trying to broker peace, trying to put people together in a room and say, who's doing it? One, we're all falling in line, which is something I don't see him doing.
No one has the guts, right? I mean, you got to have guts to do this. Scott Stringer hasn't got the guts.
If you're going to shoot the king, you don't want to miss. So.
Well, of course, all of that could change depending on what will happen now that so many of Cuomo's best friends have been caught up in this massive corruption investigation. Somebody could drop the dime on Andrew.
That's right. And I certainly think that if this does go to a trial, if more revelations come out, it's going to create at best a distraction for the governor, at worst, perhaps a major liability for him. But if there's more to come, I think that his bully pulpit and his standing as a major convener of party forces will diminish. And if something like that happens, I think you might see people, both Democrats and Republicans, get bolder in their criticism and more active in their political movement.
The governor has used SUNY as almost a plaything of his. He's created a place where people could set up businesses on SUNY campuses and get tax-free for a long time. He appoints the SUNY board. He appoints the chairman of SUNY. And if the truth be told, he probably has approval on who the chancellor of the state university is going to be. But now he's saying, okay, none of this scandal, which revolves around these two corporations you're talking about in SUNY, none of that's on my watch because SUNY is an independent agency. That's a lot of garbage, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that Governor Cuomo saw what Ellen Calieros was doing at SUNY Albany. He embraced it and he expanded his role. And he said he wanted to spread this model across upstate New York. So while the governor is correct that he didn't come up with this arrangement, he certainly should be judged and held responsible for taking this model and expanding it to upstate New York. Now, the governor has talked about the economic benefits that come with it. He has touted the potential of economic activity and new jobs from SUNY Poly Projects in Buffalo, where they've built a plant ostensibly for SolarCity, though the financial woes of SolarCity will perhaps bear on that project. He announced a chip fab in Utica, a pharmaceutical factory in Dunkirk, an airplane parts factory up in Plattsburgh, as well as a film studio and an LED factory in suburban Syracuse. Now, only the Buffalo plant is close to completion. And what happens to those other projects? Their exact fate is very, very much up in the air. And I think that ultimately, whether or not they are economically viable, will be the major test for Andrew Cuomo.
Interesting.
And as we roll along through the next year and a half, I think that will become more clear.
Interesting. Jimmy Mielkind has been our guest. He is Albany Bureau Chief of Politico. Jimmy, thanks so much for being with us.
Alan, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.